Unfortunately, I've not discussed at all. And that is, we are up to the part of the Haggadah, which a lot of people don't pay attention to, but it's a very, very important part of the Haggadah, and that is the actual story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And as we pointed out, Chazal were koveya, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, by looking at the four verses that a person recites when he brings the first fruits, when he brings the Bikurim every year. And I mentioned last week, there are different reasons why they chose this, but one of the reasons is because this is, number one, a very short account, so as a result, the Maggid is much shorter than it would be had we actually read 12 chapters in the Book of Shmos. But number two, is that this eliminates the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is because if you take Sefer Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu is in every verse, and Chazal wanted to choose psukim that do not mention the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, because this is the night in which we emphasize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of redemption. So what the section of the Haggadah does is, this is totally lifted from the Sifri. The Sifri is the Halachic Medrash on Parshas Kisavo, and these verses are in Parshas Kisavo, and what Chazal do is they take each part of the verse and they darshan it, they interpret it by bringing other psukim to explain it, and those other psukim tend to be taken from the Book of Shmos. So one of the things that if you learn the Haggadah Kipshuto that you have to always answer is, what exactly are we trying to do when we're trying to prove what a pasuk means by another pasuk? I mean, why is one pasuk a better raya than the first pasuk? So obviously what you're going to see is, in the basic pshat, that when Chazal bring a pasuk to explain a pasuk, they're not using the pasuk as a proof, but they're using the pasuk as a guide to interpret the verse in a way that you otherwise would not have. So for example, you'll never have a situation where the pasuk says the Jews were slaves, and then we're going to quote, as it says in Shmos, the Jews were slaves. There's no reason to prove the Jews were slaves from Shmos if it says it in Devarim. So that's not what's going on. What's always going on is the Shene'emar that the Medrash is quoting is to teach me a new interpretation of the verse that you otherwise wouldn't have. So the question is going to be, so what's being added at each point? Okay. So now we have four psukim. We're going to look at it at pasuk by pasuk by pasuk by pasuk, and then look at the subunits of the pasuk. Pasuk number one starts off with Lavan the Aramean tried to destroy my father. And that is the one part that is not darshaned here, because that's not about Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the next word is, Vayered Mitzrayim. My father Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. Vayogar Sham Bimsei Ma'at. He dwelt there with a small number of people. Vayehi Sham, and he eventually became there, Goy Gadol Atzum Varav, a great and mighty and multitudinous, we'll have to see what the difference of that is, nation. So, the first pasuk does not yet describe anything about slavery. It says, my father went down to Mitzrayim, he dwelt there, they were originally a small number, and they eventually became a very, very large number. So what are the different drushos on this part of the pasuk? So the first drasha we have is, by the way, the only drasha that is not proven by any other verse. It's just an assertion. Vayered Mitzrayim. Our father went to Mitzrayim. It says, Onus al pi hadibur. He was forced to go by God. Do not think that this means he voluntarily decided to take a vacation in Egypt. Nor does it even mean he went to Egypt on his own because there was a famine. Because he didn't have to go to Egypt. He could have his sons go to Mitzrayim and buy grain and bring it back. The Haggadah tells me, Yaakov went to Mitzrayim because Hashem said so. Now, although, indeed, no verse is cited to tell me that, but in point of fact, Sukkim and Bereishis say that directly, where Hashem told Yaakov, you must go to Mitzrayim. And Yaakov was very afraid. In fact, the Chumash actually tells us that Hashem appeared to Yaakov in the middle of the night and told Yaakov, do not be afraid, because Yaakov understood that this is going to be the beginning of the Gezerah. Hashem said to Avraham that your children will be enslaved in a land that is not theirs. And Yaakov is deathly afraid that there will be a spiritual assimilation in which people will hit the 50th level of impurity. So onus al pi hadibor simply means Yaakov went under compulsion. He went because Hashem commanded him to go, because this was the beginning of the avdus. This was the beginning of the bris, and it was not Yaakov's choice. Okay, again, that is adding something, because if I just read the words Vayered Mitzrayma, he went to Mitzrayim, that could very easily mean voluntary. Chazal are teaching us we have to read that the way it's understood in Bereishis, that Yaakov went only because he had to go. And we'll see in a moment that that's an important attitude to how you survive in Gullus. When you go to Gullus because you want to be in Gullus, then you're even in bigger trouble. When you go against your will, that's the way it should be. So if somebody says to a Rebbe or something, oh, I'm so unhappy in Chutz Loretz, the answer is Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. That's how it should be. If you're too happy in Chutz Loretz, you're in trouble. And the emesis, even in Eretz Yisrael, we're still in Gullus. So if a person says, what is it about Mashiach that I really need? I mean, I have yeshivos, and I have pizza places and Chinese restaurants and tours on the on the Kinneret. Like, what is my life missing exactly? It's not an easy question, actually. It's not such an easy question. But that's the emesis. The emesis in Gullus, it always has to be against your will, something that you don't really make peace with. Okay, and this is continued in the next verse, Vayagar Sham. Now, Vayagar Sham could be translated, they lived there, or he lived there, but Chazal say no. Vayagar does mean live, but it comes from the Shorish Ger, which means a stranger, right? The Ger does not really mean a convert, Ger means a stranger. It's a term that we use for a convert, because a convert comes without family and without protection and without connections. But the site of the word ger is a being a stranger. So vayogar sham, Chazal are telling us, means not only that he came to live in Mitzrayim, which Lamaisa he did, but he came with the attitude that we are to be strangers here. We are to be a foreign presence. And this was very, very important, because as many years as the Jews stayed in Mitzrayim, and they didn't just come temporarily. When it says Yaakov came only temporarily, the Mepharshim say that doesn't mean in years. He knew we were going to be there for a very long time. But the attitude was, this is not our real makom. And indeed, what did Chazal say? Chazal say, in spite of the fact that the Jewish people reached the 49th level of Tumah, which is a very, very low level, and if they waited another few minutes, the time that it takes for the dough to rise, they would have hit the 50th level. But Chazal say they had certain merits. What were their merits? They didn't change their name. They spoke Lashon HaKodesh. They didn't turn against each other to the authorities, as people often do, like turn each other in. They didn't intermarry. Now, this is not because they were from, because they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They weren't keeping the mitzvahs. They didn't do Bris Milah, except for Shevet Levi. But it does mean they were determined that they would be a separate nation. And that is the attitude that we got from Yaakov Avinu, that even though we're going to be in Mitzrayim, and even though we're coming for hundreds of years, we are coming with the intention of being strangers. Right? So when it says, Lo Yarad Lishtakea, he did not come to be permanent, but Lagor, to be temporary, that means that's an attitudinal idea, that we are to be strangers there. And that's a great protection for Am Yisrael. Right, so that's Rami Ovidav, Vayerid Mitzrayim, Vayogar Sham. Now then it says, Vayhi Sham, and Bimsei Ma'at. So Bimsei Ma'at means small number, and that's true. But we have a Pasuk, because that tells me 70. Right? So obviously the Pasuk is giving me a detail. So, Shenamar B'Shivim Nefesh. So if you ask, what is the Pasuk adding to the primary Pasuk? Yeah, that's very simple. Because the primary Pasuk says, Mesei Ma'at, and we quote a Pasuk of Shivim Nefesh. Of course, as you know, we have the famous teaching of Chazal, that if you count the number of Jews who came to Mitzrayim, it is only 69. That's Yaakov and the tribes and their children and their wives, etc. But Yocheved, Moshe Rabbeinu's mother, was the 70th person who was born as they entered Mitzrayim itself. She was born between the walls. Yocheved, Moshe Rabbeinu's mother. Based on this, though, the Eben Ezra has a very fascinating kasha on this marriage. Because the Eben Ezra says, wait a second here. The Jewish people were in Mitzrayim 210 years. That's our Masorah. They should have been 400, they were 210 years. Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old when we left Mitzrayim. Now, if Yocheved was born when we entered Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu was born 80 years before we left, that means when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, we already were in Mitzrayim 130 years. Because 130 and 80 is 210. That means Yocheved was 130 years old when Moshe was born. Now the Torah makes a big, big deal about the miracle of Yitzchak being born when Sarah was only 90 years old. And the Torah makes a big deal how what a miracle that was. And yet, the Eben Ezra says, the miracle of Yocheved was much, much greater. Because the miracle of Yocheved was she gave birth at 130 years old. So the Eben Ezra has a question, and he often disagrees. I mean, the Eben Ezra takes the freedom to often disagree with Chazal, which is Ramban criticizes him for it, and the like. But the Eben Ezra has a kasha on that medrash, why does the Torah not make such a big deal about the age of Yocheved when she gave birth to Moshe? And some people answer that, you know, the second miracle is never as great as the first, meaning to say, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mishana the Teva, and a postmenopausal woman could give birth, so when it happens the next time, it's not the same type of nace. The nace, the Chidush HaTeva, came in the merit of Sarah, and then other people could benefit even to a greater degree. That's the pashtus of it. Okay, so that's the Mishema. Then it says, now, here we have a question of translation. And we became there, I'm going to read the Haggadah here exactly, a goy gadol otsum verav. Now the question is, how do you divide those words? Now in most Haggadahs, the way it works is, the word goy has its own drasha. Gadol and otsum are joined together. In fact, it's interesting how your Haggadahs break it up. In other words, Vahisham Lagoy Gadol Otsum Barav. So then it says, Vahisham Lagoy, we're going to darshan that. Gadol Otsum, we're going to darshan that. And Rav, we're going to darshan that. Some Haggadahs have Goy Gadol. But it seems from the Mechilta that there's the drasha on Goy, there's Gadol Otsum, and there's the drasha on Rav. So let's look at each of those drushas. What is the drusha of goy? We became there a goy. It's interesting, a lot of people think, you know, in Yiddish, I mean, goy is a Hebrew word, and goy is used for a Gentile in Yiddish. So for some reason, it's picked up a very negative way. Oh, you call me a goy, goyim, you know. But the truth of the matter is, goy means a nation, and in fact, the Jewish people are referred to as a goy. In fact, it was so interesting that when the Catholic Church was censoring Gemaras in the Middle Ages, a lot of censorship the Catholic Church did. So they actually had a manual, they had a censorship manual that they gave to Jewish censors. The Jewish censors were apostates. They were Yidden who converted to Christianity, but they knew Hebrew. So because they were the ones who were in charge of whenever a certain word appeared, they were told to change it. In fact, that's why the word Akum, Oved Kochavim Umazalos, appears so often when the original Nusach was Goy, and the church changed it to idol worshiper so it shouldn't refer to Christianity. Of course, they didn't. That doesn't really help them because they're also idol worshippers, but they did not regard themselves as idol worshippers. So they changed every reference to Goy to become Akum. Right? So Akum is usually not the original term. So just to show you the anorasis of the censors, so they got a manual that says, every word goy changed to Akum. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk, Ki goy kadosh ata, you are a holy nation. Speaking about the Jewish people. So they changed it. Ki akum kadosh ata, you're a holy akum. Right? They didn't know what it was and the like. So here's a good example of goy being used in a positive way. So they became a goy in Mitzrayim. What does it mean they became a goy? Melamed, this teaches me, Shehayu Yisrael Mitsuyanim Sham. Mitsuyanim means they were clearly identifiable as Jews, meaning this is the Totsa'ah of the preceding words. Since Yaakov came down with the intention that we should remain strangers and apart, the result was we became a distinct and separate nation. And this is picking up the Chazal. Now, there's no pasuk quoting this, but that's just the idea. We became a goy. In other words, we didn't become Egyptians. We were seen as Jews in Mitzrayim. And this refers to what Chazal said. We didn't change our name, our language, our clothing, etc. Right, so that's the word goy. Now, gadol atzum. So here, gadol atzum refers to the extraordinary fertility of Bnei Yisrael. So we quote the pasuk, paru v'yishritzu, etc. And v'yatzmu means we were strong. And again, the Abarbanel points out that generally, medically, when you have multiple births, and according to Chazal, there was a huge, you know, huge numbers of multiple births and huge multiple births. Six was a minimum. Everyone had six at a time. So usually what happens is that the babies either don't survive or they're weaker or they're not as fully developed. So that's the gadol and the otzum. Those are the two combinations. Gadol means riboy of kamus, great, great increase in population. And otzum means physical strength. The physical strength was not diminished. So that's why it's read as one thing, gadol otzum, and we show that there was that extraordinary fertility. This was a great, great bracha that Am Yisrael was given, that in spite of all of the persecutions, they were blessed, and indeed, what does it say? The more they were persecuted, the more they increased. In fact, this is a famous Ramban. The Ramban points out that Shevet Levi, who were the only tribe of Mitzrayim that did not worship Avodah Zarah, and they did Bris Milah all the years in Mitzrayim. They were Kadosh Kadoshim. They were holy. They were righteous. They were by far the smallest tribe in Klal Yisrael. And one would think, the Ramban says, that the most righteous tribe should be given the greatest blessing. So the Ramban actually explains, Shevet Levi's fertility was normal. The rest of the Jewish people got a special bracha, kasher yanu oso. The more they're afflicted, the more they grew. Since Shevet Levi did not have shibud in Mitzrayim, they were not slaves in Mitzrayim. They were the clergy. They didn't get the special bracha. Now, the Ramban says they didn't have the bracha, kasher yanu oso, ken yirbev chen yifra. So the Ramban says it's not the pshat that Shevet Levi was punished by having less. Shevet Levi had normal, but they didn't have the bracha, kasher yanu oso, ken yirbev chen yifrat. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, he's now the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, he was the Rav HaRashi, now his son is the Rav HaRashi, so the father works for his son, technically. When Rabbi Lau was the Rav HaRashi, so he, you know, chief rabbis travel around the world to visit Jewish communities, so he traveled to Cuba. Because there are Jews in Cuba, interestingly enough. These were the days of Castro. And he had a meeting with Fidel Castro about helping the Jews in Cuba. And if you ever read about Castro, you know that Castro, I know I shouldn't really say Olav HaShalom, I shouldn't say, but you know, no longer with us. whoever he is, I don't know. But Castro, if you ever read about Castro, Castro was an amazing talker. He could talk for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And of course, you have to listen or you could go to prison. But he was talking with Rabbi Lau for many, many hours. And Rabbi Lau said that Castro was going crazy because Castro wanted to know, he was going with charts and computations, how do you start from 70 and have a population of 600,000 in only 210 years. And he was doing charts and demographic things, and he wanted Rabbi Lau to explain it to him, because maybe Castro wanted to increase the Cuban population. So Rabbi Lau said that he didn't really want to talk about this, but Castro kept him for 3 hours working out the birth rates to go from 70 to 600,000. My only response is, I'm glad Rabbi Lau didn't tell him the Medrash that was only one-fifth, and four-fifths died in the plague of darkness. Then you'd have much more of a problem, because you had a much bigger population. But the short answer is that this was a miraculous bracha. This was a great, great bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Am Yisrael, because in a sense, the way it works is this. Yeah, you have to remember how vulnerable we were. We were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. We were Mefer Bris Mila. We're on the 49th level of Tuma. But there were certain things that we had that kept us going. One of them, as it were, we refused to assimilate, we didn't change our names, our language. And the other is, we needed a critical mass. We needed a large number. Because had there been a small number, we wouldn't have been able to combat it. So in a sense, you could say that the Riboy HaKamos, great increase in physical numbers, was a bit of a substitute for the Riboy HaEichas, for the degradation that we did suffer spiritually. And in fact, that might be why Shevet Levi, that might be another response. Shevet Levi didn't need the great numbers, because they remained tzaddikim without that great miracle. Okay, so that's Goy. So Goy is the separateness of the Jewish people, not changing their languages. Gadol Otzum is the numbers plus the physical strength, which was good. Now then we come to Verov. Now this is hard. In English, I don't think you're going to see a difference. It already says we were multitudinous. Gadol means we were many. Now it's interesting. Without the Haggadah, I might have said Gadol meant great. And Rav is the word that means many. That's what I would have said. But you see from the Haggadah a whole different Chiddush. Because the Haggadah does not take Gadol to mean great, but it takes Gadol to be numerous. So now, the Baal Haggadah painted himself into a corner. Because once you say Gadol means numerous, you got a real problem. What does Rav mean? You see what I'm saying? Now this is a big Kiddush. In translation, you would have thought Gadol means great, and Rav means many. But no, Gadol means many, and Rav means, well, what does Rav mean? So it quotes a pasuk, and this is not a pasuk in the Torah. This is a pasuk in the Navi Yechezkel. Now Yechezkel was a Navi who lived in Bavel. He was already in Bavel. In the years right before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Right before, because if you remember, the Jewish people were exiled from Eretz Yisrael in two stages. 11 years before the Churban, the great Talmidei Chachamim were exiled. Mordechai was in that. That's called the Golus of Yehoyachin or Yechonya, who was the king at the time. Remember the Pasuk in Megillas Esther, Asher Heglam Yerushalayim? Mordechai was exiled from Jerusalem, Im HaGolah Asher HaGlasa, with the exiles who were exiled through King Yechonya Melech Yehuda. So, if you know the chronology, if somebody would ask you, did Mordechai leave Eretz Yisrael before the Chorban or after the Chorban? You should know that he left 11 years before the Chorban, because that's called the Golus of Yechonya, or Yehoyachin, that's the same name. And the Chorban Golus, 11 years later, is called the Golus of Tzidkiyahu, who was the uncle of Yehoyachin, who was the last king of Eretz Yehuda. So basically, Yirmiyahu HaNavi stayed in Eretz Yisrael for those 11 years and physically experienced the Chorban. Yechezkel was the Navi in Bavel. But Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu are both warning the people to do tshuva, otherwise there's going to be a tremendous Chorban Beis HaMikdash and destruction of Am Yisrael. So in a very, very famous mashal, Yechezkel speaks from Hashem, that means Hashem's words, but Yechezkel conveys the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through parables and mashalim. And one of the famous mashalim Yechezkel uses is the Jewish people in Mitzrayim were like an abandoned baby, a beautiful, charming baby that was thrown into the gutter that nobody wanted to take care of. But then a benefactor came and took the baby in and cleaned the baby and beautified the baby. So initially he's like a parent. And then a love relationship develops and he marries the young woman who becomes charming and beautiful. And then it goes on and say, and then this young woman commits adultery and fornication as if she no longer appreciates. That's how the Jewish people are described. So in this pasuk, Yechezkel is describing the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Now, I'm going to translate the pasuk, and then we'll see what are Chazal using this pasuk to prove. Let's look at the pasuk. Revava kitzemach hasadeh nasatich. I made you as multiplicitous, you know, as many as the grass of the field. Vatirbi vatigdili. This is feminine, speaking to Klal Yisrael as a woman. And you grew up and matured. Vatavayi bi'adei adayim. And you became charming and beautiful. And then there's even a physical imagery. Shadayim nachonu, your breasts were formed. Usarech tzimeach, and your hair was fully grown. And yet, v'at erum ve'eriya, but you were still naked and bereft. Ve'evor alayach, and I passed over you, ve'erech misbosesses b'tamayach, I saw you soaking in your blood. Ve'aymar lach, and I said to you, b'damayach chayi, by your blood you shall live. And it says it again, this is in the pasuk itself, ve'aymar lach b'damayach chayi. Okay, do you remember hearing these words anywhere? Right, every breast these words are said. And this is based on a drasha of how Chazal understand this pasuk. And the way they understand the pasuk is, Hashem looks at Bnei Yisrael, and he sees a beautiful, so to speak, a beautiful woman that's ready to be redeemed. And indeed, I have to redeem her, because Hashem says, because if I don't redeem her, she will totally be destroyed. But she is still naked. Naked meaning she doesn't have mitzvah, she doesn't have merits. Hashem has a real dilemma. We're supposed to be in Mitzrayim 400 years, but he has to take us out because after 210 we're the 49th level of Tumah. But he can't take us out because we're naked, we don't have zechuyos. So Hashem says, by your blood, Lashon Rabbah, bloods, you shall live. Chazal say, Hashem gave us two commandments of blood, which put us over the top. The fulfillment of the mitzvah of bris milah, which is our own blood, and the fulfillment of the mitzvah of korban pesach, which is the blood on the doorpost. That's why we say this pasuk at a bris milah, because in the merit of milah, Hashem protects us, but it's also referring to the korban pesach. Okay, that's what this pasuk is talking about. It's basically saying, you became as multitudinous as the grass of the field, and you became wonderful, beautiful, charming. Hashem sees the inner beauty of the Jewish soul. But you were naked, you had no mitzvahs, you had no excuse that I had to redeem you. So I said, by your blood you will live. Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. Alright, that's the pasuk. So that's the pasuk in Yechezkel. So the question becomes, what are we using the pasuk in Yechezkel to explain Rav? So here the Mefarshim say, we're using the word Rav because it's connected to the idea Revava, you are many like the grass. And what that's bringing up is the following. This goes back to the more you're oppressed, right, with grass, it is said, although it's not clear if it's always going to be true today, that the more you cut grass, the faster and thicker it grows. So Hashem is saying, so it's kind of explaining, the previous word said, you became many. And this word is telling me how you became many. You became many through the bracha that I compare you to the grass. That the more you are afflicted, the more you will grow, as the Ramban said. That's why Shevet Levi didn't have the bracha. So that's what Rav is adding. Rav is not simply talking about a large number, but it's connecting the large number to the oppression, and that is the comparison to grass. Okay, so that's pasuk number one. So at this point, we've established a tremendous growth of the population. That's pasuk one. Pasuk beis, v'yareyu osanu hamitzrim, the Egyptians. Well, the simple translation, although we'll see Chazal didn't translate it this way, did bad things to us. The anunu, and they afflicted us. Vayitnu aleinu avodah kasha, and they put upon us hard work. So the problem that Chazal have is, these three expressions seem to be just saying the same thing. They did bad things, number one. They afflicted us, number two. They gave us hard labor, number three. What's the difference between them? So, look at the supporting pasuk, because now we start bringing pasukim. The Egyptians did bad to us, as it is said, now we're quoting Shmos, come, let us be wise, lest they increase, and when there's war, they will join our enemies, and they will leave the land. So, what is the point here? So the Abarbanel says beautifully. The Rabbanel says that what Chazal are telling you is V'yareyu osanu hamitzrim does not mean the Egyptians did bad to us. It means the Egyptians made us into bad people. Meaning they considered us to be ingrates, unloyal. And that's exactly what the pasuk says. Because the point of the matter is that initially when we came to Mitzrayim, remember this is before we were slaves, when we came to Mitzrayim, we came as guests of honor, Yosef, etc. And if anything, we were grateful to the Egyptians for giving us food. And then, when the new Paro didn't know Yosef, Machlokas, he didn't know Yosef, or he made believe, he acted like he never knew Yosef, he started accusing the Jews of a lack of gratitude, of disloyalty. They will join our enemies. That's commonly an anti-Semitic, you know, argument. The Jews are not loyal, you know, etc. So you see what the pasuk is doing here. V'yareyu osanu, they made us into evil people, as the pasuk says. So this is obviously adding a chiddush. Without this, kamosha ne'amar, I would have translated V'yareyu osanu, as every English translation will say, they did bad things to us. And then you'd have Akasha, but then the pasuk goes on and says they afflicted us. But no, V'yareyu osanu, they made us into evil people. They demonized us. Okay. Now, V'yanunu.
Does that mean they actually demonize us? But because it seems like none of these things are true.
It is not true. That's correct. It's not true.
Oh, okay.
That's what it's saying. They made us into bad people. Now, it's true. Once they enslaved us, then we leave. But as it were, we were not going to rebel against them.
Well, I thought it meant like they sort of assimilated us and made us into Egyptians.
No. In other words, they made us bad, meaning to say they accused us of being bad people. Now, the Anunu, they afflicted us. So here we quote the pasuk that there were taskmasters and they built Ore Miskinos, storehouses, Pithom and Ramses. So here, what are Chazal bringing here? Because Chazal and Meram is to the following. The Gemara says that Pithom and Ramses, you know, people sometimes say, oh, did the Jews build the pyramids? Did the Jews build the Sphinx? According to the Gemara, no, because the Egyptians had a strategy of demoralizing the Jews by making everything they built fall apart, meaning to say, there's an old Greek story of Sisyphus, and Sisyphus was somebody who was punished by the gods, the Greek gods, and his onesh was he had to roll a boulder up a mountain and see it come down every time, meaning even a slave has satisfaction if his building comes up. He sees, I built something. But if you really want to demoralize a person, every time he builds, he gets destroyed. So Pisum and Ramses were like built on quicksand. Every time the Jews build something, in fact, the Nazis used to do that a lot. The Nazis used to make people do meaningless, repetitive work that didn't do anything. So you didn't even have the satisfaction psychologically that you did something worthwhile in the course of the day. So what is being suggested, therefore, from this pasuk of Pithom and Ramses is the affliction was not just the physical work. The affliction was the lack of psychological satisfaction that you got anything done. You felt your existence was aimless and pointless and purposeless. And that is the reference to Pithom and Ramses, right? So now you see that each expression is different. V'yareyu osanu is they made us into evil people. The second is they psychologically devastated us by not giving us a sense of accomplishment. And the third thing is avoda kasha, which again, you could say that just means hard work. But Chazal say no, they add the idea of perech, perech. Now perech is, right, we were bringing in the pasuk of Shemos, that they worked us with perech. Now there are two interpretations of perech. Perech is back-breaking work, but the other interpretation is perech is a contraction of two words, perach, a soft mouth, meaning to say they tricked us into becoming slaves by friendship. They said, you know, they started working together with us and then eventually they got disengaged. If you remember, if you ever read, at least the American students ever read Tom Sawyer and how he got people to paint a fence, he kind of started with them and then eventually they wound up doing everything. In fact, Mark Twain might have gotten it from the Gemara because you know, he knew people that were familiar with the Talmudic texts and the like. So according to that, therefore, the Avaida Kasha, the Shver Avaida, was the sense of betrayal. So Pasuk number two, therefore, is adding a lot of dimensions here. That apart from the physical work itself, there is a sense of being portrayed as disloyal and ungrateful. There is the sense of not being productive in the work that you're doing. And there is the sense of a friendship being betrayed, in which the Egyptians initially made believe they were friends, and then we get betrayed by our friend. That hurts much more, right? When someone comes to you with a friendship and then turns out to really hate you, that's a much more painful thing than somebody who never liked me to begin with. Okay, so you see what Chazal are doing, that each pasuk is we have a chiddush in that pasuk by looking at a supporting pasuk. Okay, so that's pasuk base. Pasuk gimel is our eventual response. Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. Again, the pashtus is the koach of tefillah. Vayishma Hashem es kolenu. And Hashem eventually heard our voice. He heard. Vayar, and he saw Onyenu, our affliction, Amolenu, our toil, Lachatsenu, our oppression. So there are some things Hashem heard and some things Hashem saw. And it starts off, we cried out to Hashem, the God of our forefathers. So, the Haggadah proves that we cried out by quoting a verse in Shemos. Shenemar, as it's written. Vayhi b'yamim harabim ahem, it was in those many days, because when you're a slave, you know, every day seems like many days. Vayamas melech Mitzrayim, when the pyro died, the first pyro that enslaved them died. V'yayonchu b'neiso min aveda, and they groaned from their aveda by Yizako, and they screamed, v'tal shavasam el elokim, and their cry went up to God from the avoda, from their work. So again, the question that you'll ask is, it says here they cried out to God, so why do I need to quote another pasuk that says they cried out to God? What is the commotion Amar adding to Vanitzak El Hashem Elokei Avoseinim? So here the Abarbanel says a gevaldik pshat. Rashi brings in Chumash, it's from the Gemara really, when it says the king of Egypt died, and that is why the Jewish people started crying. Now you might ask a kasha on that pasuk itself. I mean, why would our cries increase when the king of Egypt died? Like, why would that be so? So Rashi brings a medrash that when it says Paro died, it doesn't mean he died, but he became a metzora. He had leprosy, which was treated like death. And the medical treatment that the doctors told him for his saras is he had to bathe in the blood of slaughtered Jewish babies. So the reason why they cried and they screamed, but dafka at that point, is because there was an additional tragedy that, this is besides the throwing into the river, that was much earlier, but this is a new tragedy in which Jewish babies were killed, they were murdered, so Paro would have blood. Now, the Abarbanel then goes further, but look at what the pasuk says. So when the pasuk says the king of Mitzrayim died, and that's interpreted to mean he was a metzora and he needed blood, and the Jewish people groaned from the work and they cried out, and their scream went to God from their work. Now wait a second here. What do you mean from their work? If you're going to tell me that what happened is he was slaughtering Jewish babies, why does the pasuk say they were crying from their work? It should say they were crying from the deaths of their children. The answer is, says the Abarbanel, this pasuk is communicating that they were so dehumanized, their spirits were so broken, that even when their own children are getting killed, the only thing they can think about is, more dead weight we have to schlep around, because they had to bring the bodies to Paro. In other words, they weren't crying over the deaths of their children. They were crying over the extra work the deaths of the children entailed. In other words, this pasuk actually expresses the dehumanization of Am Yisrael that forced Hashem to act quickly, because this is the 49th level of Tumah. And therefore, so how does this go back to the interpret? The Nitzak El Hashem Elokei Avoseinu don't interpret that we davened to Hashem, but rather we screamed out of pain and God listened. That's very different. It's not that I'm focusing on my prayers to Hashem, but rather it was like a wounded animal that was so, right? An animal gets caught in a barbed wire, gets caught in a trap, so the animal screams. Now it's not praying in the sense that we would understand prayer, papashtus, but it's screaming. So Chazal, by quoting this pasuk, is saying, "V'nitzak El Hashem," we cried out to God, means it was the cry of an animal that Hashem heard. And that is why he had to save us. Because if a yid reaches a level, if a human being reaches a level, that when your own children are being murdered, the only thing that bothers you is, there's more dead weight I gotta schlep around, you're reaching a point of no return. And Hashem says, I gotta intervene at this point. And so that's the chiddush, the Rabbanel says, of a nitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu. Then the Nitziv says a little differently, but it's the same, almost the same idea, that when it says we cried out to God, the God of our forefathers, that means that's all we could say, meaning we didn't have the, in other words, we cried out to God, comma, quotation mark, God of our forefathers, meaning we didn't have the Yishuv Hadas to have a tefillah. Our tefillah was only Elokei Avoseinu, which is again the sense of you reach the end of your limit. You can't even articulate your davening. Okay, so that's Vanitzak. So according to that, Vanitzak El Hashem and the Vayishma is the idea that Hashem saw the dehumanization of how far we reached, and he had to respond. And the reason he had to respond, that's really the next thing, because of the covenant he made with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Meaning, in a sense, it's the other way around. If we reach such a low madrega, that would logically have been a reason for Hashem not to respond, because we're not worthy. But the other way around, because Hashem made a shvuah, a bris, with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, he cannot allow the Jewish people to be destroyed. And if we are approaching the point of destruction, the bris avos says Hashem has to answer. So when it says Hashem heard our voice, the way it's interpreted is he heard what we were complaining about, which showed how dehumanized we were. And therefore he had to respond because of the bris of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So it's a different case. It doesn't mean he heard our prayers. It's the other way. Hearing how low we were in our screams made him have to respond because of Zechus Avos or Bris Avos. Okay. So, yeah.
Is it... I just know in Mahalach that the whole purpose of taking us to Mitzrayim was to kind of bring us to the center of Gashmiut and show us, no, you don't belong here. If you want to assimilate, then there's no chance. You're just going to get beaten all the Gashmiut out of you.
Right.
So then, wouldn't that sort of be like, we're there, Hashem, like, that's, so it's almost like what Hashem wanted to happen, and therefore...
Yeah, well, in many ways, yes. In many ways, yes. But the problem is, you know, it's hard to use this lashon about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but sometimes, you know, experiments can fail. Meaning to say, there was a goal here in which we would see how bad this was. But the problem is, in exposing ourselves to how bad it was, we have the risk of losing our Kedusha, losing our humanity. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to stop the experiment early. I think I mentioned to you from the Chidushi Harim, an amazing, very, very disconcerting thought. Chidushi Harim says, if we would have been able to remain in Mitzrayim for the full 400 years, we would have been cleansed of all the spiritual impurities. And there would be no Galus, there would be Mashiach, and that would be it. Because we could not last 190 years, we need thousands of years of Galus to remove the tumor within us. Again, chemotherapy is really a perfect example. You know, you sometimes have to stop chemotherapy because the toxicity is so great that the patient's going to die. But if you stop it early, you have cancer inside the patient, it's going to continue to grow, and at some point you may have to do something even more radical. Hopefully the patient might be healthier later, whatever it would be. That's exactly it. If, because we didn't last 190 more years to make it 400, we only lasted 210, we need thousands and thousands of years. The cancer was not cleansed from us in that way. Yeah.
So why prescribe 400 years?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what the cheshbon was, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said we needed that period of time to be mezachech, to purify us. Now, let's go further, because now the pasuk separates between what Hashem heard and what Hashem saw. And there are three things Hashem saw. He saw our affliction, he saw our toil, and he saw our oppression. Again, in English, these words don't necessarily have any distinct meanings. So Chazal wanted to define each of these three terms. Now, Chazal don't directly tell you why this is Hashem seeing it and not hearing it, but as we go through the terms, it will answer this question, why something is Vayishma and something is Vayar. Because the Netziv makes the point that the following three things the Jewish people didn't pray about. They didn't pray. And therefore, we use the word Vayar when Hashem sees the suffering that people didn't mention in their prayer. And you'll see why they didn't mention it. Now, the first is affliction. Now, it would be tempting that this is really the same shoresh as the word in the preceding pasuk. It says, V'yanunu, they afflicted us. Hashem saw our affliction. Pashtus for sure is, I would translate on Yenu the same way we translated Vayanunu. And yet, Chazal will give a different meaning to on Yenu. Remember the Vayanunu, we said, that referred to Pitam and Ramses, in which all of our work collapsed and we didn't have a sense of accomplishment. When it comes to this, on Yenu, it says, on Yenu is precious derech eretz. Precious derech eretz means that at various times, maybe after we had a big population, so it was like China, there was forcible separation of husband and wife. Men and women were physically separated from each other. And we know from Hilchos Yom Kippur that the forcible separation of marital intimacy is called inui. It is one of the inuyim. Now, the Netziv says, that is why it says Hashem saw, because they were embarrassed to even pray to Hashem over that. So they had a natural modesty in which you don't pray to Hashem to have intimacy with your wife. But Hashem saw the suffering, even when they didn't ask. Okay, that's precious derech eretz. Now, why didn't Chazal interpret onyenu to mean what it meant in the preceding pasuk? Because that they were praying for. You know, God, you know, take us out of our slavery. So since this is vayar, which has a mashmos, they weren't praying for it. It has to be something that they, you know, they were embarrassed to ask for, and that is precious derech eretz.
Is that almost a praise or is it a bad thing if they
don't daven to Hashem? Well, it's not really a praiseworthy thing. I mean, really, one should daven to Hashem for whatever one needs. But it's praiseworthy in the sense that they did have a natural modesty. Again, it was a misplaced modesty. But nevertheless, it came from a sense of humility before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to ask for it. Now, the next one is Amaleinu. Is the Gezerah of the Banim that were thrown into the Nile. Now here the Netziv says a Gevaldike point. When was that Gezerah? That Gezerah was 80 years before. That was long gone. Remember, the Gezerah was buckled when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. So they weren't praying about that now. The Netziv says, Hashem remembers every bit of suffering that His people go through, even if they don't even remember it. That's why they weren't praying about this, because this wasn't going on anymore. But this is a tremendous thing. There's no krech, there's no groan of a yid that a Kaddish Baruch Hu ignores. The stipler used to say, you know, people would ask the stipler, what happened to all of the prayers of Yidden in the Holocaust that died? Hashem just ignored those prayers. Those tefillahs are gone. He says, no. Those tefillahs are helping countless Jews now. How many Jews are not dying or get better? Part of that are the tefillahs that were offered then. Hashem remembers every tzara and uses it as a basis of rachamim for Klal Yisrael. So that's Amaleinu. So again, it's important to know. A lot of people go through this, they don't realize. This Gezerah is many, many, many decades before the event of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But at that point, Hashem remembers all of that suffering. And the same thing with Lachatzenu. Lachatzenu is Dechak, Dechak. So the Netziv explains, Dechak does not refer to hard work. It refers to crowded living conditions. And he said, a person gets dehumanized, he doesn't even think about it anymore. And therefore, they didn't pray. In other words, they prayed about the hard work, you know, the work they're doing. And like the Rabbi Nell said, the extra work in having to carry the bodies of their dead children. But the crowded living conditions, we've been doing that for hundreds of years. I know, almost 200 years. or 210 years. So the Netziv basically says, that's why these three things are nichlal in what Hashem sees. Hashem saw the suffering we had with Precious Derech Eretz. Hashem saw the suffering that we had when our children were thrown into the Nile. And Hashem saw, once again, dehumanization, how dehumanized we had become because of the lachatz, because of the dechak. Right? Vayishma. He heard our dehumanization in the sense that all we're praying for is about the hard work, even though we're killing our children. And then he sees all of the suffering that we're not even conscious of anymore. And Hashem remembers even that which we forget. So we have a lot of different things here. We have the Hashem sees the bris avos. Hashem sees the dehumanization of Am Yisrael, in which we're reaching the 50th level. Hashem sees the suffering, even if we forgot it, and even if it was long gone already. And then his rachamim is nisorer. So now we come to the fourth pasuk. And the fourth pasuk is the response. This is it. The fourth pasuk. This is a four pasuk narration of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And all Chazal are doing is taking each part and giving you pshat in it. V'yitzienu Hashem mimitzrayim. And Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. This is what a person says every year again when he brings Bikurim. And what did he take us out with? It mentions five things. Yad Chazaka, strong hand. Zroya Netuya, outstretched arm. Mora Gadol, great fear, fearsome revelations. Osos, signs. And Mofsim, also wonders. So once again, five things. He took us out with Yad Chazaka, Zeroa Netuya, Mora Gadol, Osos, Mofsim. We're now going to explain each part of this. God took us out of Mitzrayim. The emphasis is Hashem did it alone. No Malach, no Sarif, no Shaliach. Now, I had mentioned, again, this is the idea that even though Moshe Rabbeinu did all of these miracles, but Yitzias Mitzrayim was through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Makas Bechoros was through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there is, of course, there is a famous question, because on one hand we say, Vavarti, that's what we bring, Vavarti, I will go through Eretz Mitzrayim, Ani Belo Malach, I will kill the firstborn of Egypt. So the question is, though, the Torah says, we put blood of the Korban Pesach on our doorpost and on the top, on the lintel. Why? Lo yitain hamashchis lavo el batechem. So that the angel of destruction will not enter your house because of the Korban Pesach. So there's a famous stira. Was Makas Bechoros done by Hashem? Or was Makas Bechoros done by Mashchis, by this power of destruction, which is the Malach HaMavis? So there are a lot of different answers. One answer is that it's Hashem that did Makas Bechoros. But even though Hashem does Makas Bechoros, the Malach HaMavis still has his regular job to do. There are people who were scheduled to die Leil Pesach. So what the Torah is saying is, that particular night, not a single Jew died, even from the Malach HaMavis, because the Dam Pesach made it a Leil Shimurim, a night of protection. So it's not a contradiction. Makas Bechoros is ani velo Malach. Lo yitain hamashchis lavo is the Malach HaMavis, even if somebody was supposed to die that night, they did not die. In fact, that's why it says that the dogs did not bark. Dogs, apparently, have a feeling when the Malach HaMavis is Be'ir, the dog starts barking. Right? And dogs have this sense. Even though today dogs know when earthquakes are coming, they know all sorts of things that they feel. And the idea was that since there was no Malach HaMavis that night, except for Hashem from Mitzrayim, the Klovim were not Sayakim that night. The Klovim were quiet, yeah.
So why didn't they die the next day?
Maybe they did. You know, we don't have a riot. In other words, did people?
I thought, no, yeah.
Well, let's see. That's a little bit of a... Thank you so much, Yishkaich. Have a good Yom Tov. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I understand. Thank you. You're right. The Ramban actually writes... That's an interesting question. The Ramban actually writes that nobody died in the Midbar naturally, except for the Gezeira of Hashem. So that might be interesting. So maybe it turns out that Pesach night created a permanent Shemirah for the whole Dor HaMidbar, even afterwards. It was not just a one night thing. It was a permanent situation that nobody dies unless there's a special... the Ramban says there were no natural deaths in the 40 years in the Midbar. A whole generation died, but that was Hashem's Gezeira on Tisha B'Av that they would die. Now, I'd also mention to you, it's interesting that the Girsa I have is Lo al Yidei Malach, V'lo al Yidei Saraf, V'lo al Yidei Sholiach. But most Haggadahs have it Lo al Yidei Malach, V'lo al Yidei Saraf, V'lo al Yidei Ha Sholiach. And I think I told you before that Malach, Saraf, and Ha Sholiach, the first letter spells Moshe. It was not through Moshe. Do not interpret it through Moshe. That's why you have to be HaShaliach. If you're Garish Shaliach, that's not good. All right, so this is important because sometimes, like what is the Haggadah telling you here? Sometimes when it says somebody does something, that sometimes doesn't mean they did it. They did it through a Shaliach. Like it might say Moshe put up the Mishkan, but that means he made it through Bezalel. So I might have said, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. I might have had a Hava Amina. That means through the Sholichos of Moshe Rabbeinu. Kamash Malan, no, this was not Al Yidei Malach, not Al Yidei Saraf, not Al Yidei Sholich. Right? So that's the Chiddush of that. Now, we then have these five phrases. Yad Chazaka, Zeroa Nituya, Mora Gadol, Osos, and Mofsin. And each of these is interpreted by reference to another pasuk. But before we get to the other pasuk, because that gets confusing, let's just list what the interpretation of each of these terms is. Yad Chazaka is Deber. Deber is the plague where all the animals died. So already you got a problem. Why are you singling out one that's one of the 10 plagues? Zeroa Nituya is Cherev, sword. What plague is the sword? Maybe Makas Bechoros, but it doesn't say only Bechor, right? Cherev, there is no Maka called Cherev. Okay. Mora Gadol. Okay, that's a general term. Gilei Shechina, meaning Yitzias Mitzrayim, there was a great revelation of God's divine presence. Okay, we could understand that. That could refer to everything. Again, the supporting verses I'll get to. Osos, signs, refers to the Mateh, meaning which means through the Mateh, miraculous things were done. So the Mateh was the catalyst for the Makos. Okay, the staff, Moshe Rabbeinu's staff. Okay, that's okay. Mofsim, wonders, is blood. Once again, we're back to the problem. Why are you singling out? Meaning of these five things, there are two makos that are mentioned specifically. Yad Chazaka is said to be Dever, the plague of the animals dying. And Mofsim is said to be blood, which is the first plague. And then maybe Zeroa Nituya might be Makas Bechoros, depending on what you mean by Cherev. So you either only have two plagues mentioned, or maybe three plagues mentioned. But there are 10 plagues. Like, why are we singling out? All right, so Gili Shechina and Mateh are general ideas. That there was a great revelation of God's Shechina, and they were effected through the miraculous staff of Moshe. So those are general. But the other ones are specific references to plagues. So why would that be so, right? Why would you mention those plagues? Why not the plague of hail? Why not the plague of Sardea? Why not the plague of Kenan? What is special about Dam and what is special about Dever? Right? That's a problem. And really, all the Mefarshim, anyone, any Haggadah that explains this portion has to deal with that problem. And as always, there are, you know, many, many, many different interpretations. But let me give you the Nitziv. The Nitziv has a very unusual interpretation, but it fits the Pshat very nicely. And not only does it fit the Pshat, but it also fits the supporting verses. He says like this. When it says, Yad Chazaka is Dever, it does not mean the Dever, which is one of the 10 plagues. Because why would that plague be singled out as opposed to the other plagues? But rather, Dever refers to the plague in which 4/5 of the Jewish people died during the plague of darkness. They died through Dever. And the reason he says that is because the word Yad Chazaka, and I think we talked about this when we learned Avodah Mayinu L'Paro, is a reference to God imposing his rule on Am Yisrael when they're unwilling to accept it. Meaning, Hashem took us out in a forcible way by basically saying, you either come out or you die in Egypt. And therefore the Dever is the Yad Chazaka of Hashem. Yecheskel says, Im lo b'yad chazaka, im lo chalechem. Now, the only question is, you're going to ask a kasha on the Nitziv, because when it says Yad Chazaka is Dever, it quotes a pasuk in which the plague of the animals dying is called the Yad Hashem. But in other words, how do I know Yad Chazaka means Dever? Because we find that the plague of Dever is called the hand of Hashem. But that's referring to the plague of Dever. You see? So the Nitziv says, if you understand the way Chazal, Darshan, Psukim, that's not really Akasha. Chazal don't mean to say that this Dever has to be the same as that Dever. It's just showing that Dever is referred to in Psukim as the hand of God. Therefore, we are permitted to say that the Dever against the Jewish people, Bishlosha Shemeah's plague, Bishlosha Shemeah Fela, is Dever. Okay, so that's a bit of a daichik in the Nitziv, but you'll see it in the next one that you have to say that in the next one, absolutely. Zeraya Netuya is sword. So here the Nitziv says the following. This is not Makas Bechoros or any particular plague, but rather the Nitziv says the following idea. The Nitziv says, you know, the plagues against the whole nation of Egypt, there were a lot of space in between them. They would go on for a week and then there'd be 3 weeks with a break to do tshuva. Now during those 3 weeks, there's a lot of havoc that the Egyptians could have done to the Jewish people. So the Nitziv has a Masarev, he has different Midrashim that say, in between the plagues, during the dead time, the troublemakers or the leaders, the people who would agitate and go against the Jews, they died. They got sick, they died, etc. That's the cherev. The cherev is the interim punishments that are not even the makos. Now, the reason these are not makos is the makos were directed to all of the Egyptian people. These were only the leaders, meaning the leaders, you know, during those 3 weeks, they didn't have time to do anything against the Jewish people. There was a constant cherub, meaning God was smiting them. Okay, so you understand. Totally different, therefore. Dever is the Yad Chazaka against Am Yisrael, who didn't want to leave. The cherub, the Zeraya Netuya, is the cherub against the leaders of Egyptians in the dead time between the makos. So it's not a makah. It's not a maga. Now, here, look at the supporting pasuk, because here you have to say like the Nitziv, 100%. As it is written, how do you know that Zeraya, an outstretched arm, refers to the sword of God? Because we have a pasuk, Charbo Shalufa Biyado, his sword is extended in his hand, outstretched over Yerushalayim. So typically, somebody's going to ask you what to say there. What is outstretched over Yerushalayim? I mean, we're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is a sword outstretched over Yerushalayim? What is this? What is this having to do with anything? Answer is Pashut. This pasuk is in the end of Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel, a base, and it talks about the fact that David HaMelech, in violation of the halacha, counted the Jewish people. And as a result, there was an angel of God that had a sword stretched over Yerushalayim who was going to kill the Jews, because when you count people by head, you bring punishment. And David HaMelech was able to take away the punishment by buying the Har HaBayis, which he did, and getting ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what this pasuk is talking about. Nothing to do with Paro, nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. So why are we bringing it in? Linguistically, we just want to show Cherev is connected to an outstretched arm, Netuya. You see, that's right, if you learn Haggadah, that's what Chazal do. Chazal is simply showing you what a word means. So when people try to say, what does this pasuk have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? The answer is, again, Pasha Pshat, it has nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. It is simply a proof that Netuya is Cherev. And this is going to be true, by the way, whether you go with the Netziv, that the Cherev is what happens in between the Makos, or like most Mefarshim learn, Cherev is the Makas Bechoros. Makas Bechoros. Either way, the Pasuk of Netuya Yerushalayim is not referring to that either way. But there are two Pshatim in Cherev. Okay. So now we understand, Dever and Cherev are not Makos, according to the Netziv. Okay. Moragadol Gilei Shechina. So here, the Netziv has a chiddush that this pasuk, God took us out of Mitzrayim, is not only referring to Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's referring to the whole process of bringing us to Eretz Yisrael. And he says, Gilei Shechina is referring not to Hashem's revelation in Egypt, but Hashem's revelation in the Midbar with the Man and with the Be'er, and the like. And that's the pasuk that it talks about, that Hashem did all of these things in Mitzrayim and in the Midbar, etc. And the Gilei Shechina, which creates what? Gilei Shechina creates Mora Gadol, great, great fear. That refers to the whole Mahalech in the Midbar. Osos is Matek, that is fairly okay. And the final one is Dam. So we're back to the same problem. Dam is a Makkah. Why are you mentioning it? So the Netziv says, again, it's not so much for this way. Most Mefarshim learn that Dam is the first Makkah. But then the question is, why do you single it out and why do you mention it last? First of all, why would it be last? It's first. The Netziv says, Dam is the flip side of Gilei Shechina. Gilei Shechina is the positive revelation of God. Man, Be'er, Anane Hakava. But you know, there's a certain cost when you're in the presence of Hashem in an open way. Every little Avera is magnified. That's why people die in the Midbar left and right. Because when you're in the palace of the king, just as the Rishayim say, the Ramban writes, a chait in Eretz Yisrael is worse than a chait in Chutz La'aretz, because you're in the palace of the king. That's why the Ramban writes that the Averis of Sodom and Amorah were not worse than Mitzrayim. Right? Sodom is near Mitzrayim, right? The Dead Sea is near Mitzrayim. So how come Hashem destroys Sodom and Amorah because they're such big Rishayim? And he doesn't destroy Mitzrayim? The Ramban says Mitzrayim was just as bad. But the answer is, in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem is not so well vicious. In Chutz La'aretz, Hashem will have more patience, Kaviyach. Because the closer you are to Hashem, the greater is the Midas Adin. So if Gilei Shechina was the wonders that Hashem did in the Midbar, Dam is the bloody consequence of being morate against Hashem in the Midbar because of that Gilei Shechina. You see, this is a very, very different interpretation. I don't think in any translation of the Haggadah you will even see this. But this is how he explains it. Which means the only reference to the ten makos, which is very indirect, is the mate itself. The mate. Everything else, the Yad Chazaka, which is the Deber, is Am Yisrael dying in the Midbar. Dying in Mitzrayim. And then the Zroya Matuya is the death of Egyptian rabble-rousers in between the makos. Gilei Shekhinah refers to the positive chasadim that Hashem did to us by revealing His Shekhinah in the Midbar already, in the Midbar. The Matah is the Matah of Moshe that indeed did the ten makos. Why is it out of order? It's a bit of a kasha. And Dam is the flip side of Gilei Shekhinah, in which when Hashem's Shekhinah is manifest and you're morate against Hashem, the onesh is going to be much greater. When there's Hester coming, the onesh is going to be less because Hashem is concealing Himself. Right? Now, here too, Shenemar, how do I know Mofsim, signs, is a reference to blood? Shenemar, V'nasati Mofsim, Hashem says, I will put signs in heaven and earth, and Dam B'Yesh, V'Simra Sashem, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. Again, people will read this and say, what are the pillars of smoke? What is the fire? What fire was there? Again, this pasuk has nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. This pasuk is actually referring to the wars of Gog and Magog. It's a pasuk in the Nabi Yoel. And this is referring to the wars of Gog and Magog. And it says that there'll be wars with fire. In fact, people say this actually describes the World Trade Center. On September 11th, there will be blood and fire and smoke, columns of smoke. So all we're trying to do is we're trying to show that the Navi uses the word mofes in connection with blood. So that frees us up to say mofsim refers to blood. Okay? Do you understand that we're not interpreting that pasuk in Yoel, we're just using it as a dictionary for what a term could mean. You see? So, that's pshat number one. And then, as you know, there's already a minhag, this is a minhag, that since we're already talking about retribution, so when we discuss retribution, we take a drop of wine out of the cup. Now, why is that so? Well, actually, the main minhag is for the ten plagues, but people do it here too. I'll go back around, do the ten plagues, then I'll go back. Now, then's a davar acher. Davar acher, as you know from the Gemara, is an alternative explanation to the five expressions. Yad Chazaka, Zeroa Nituya, Mora Gadol, Osos Mofsin. We gave a separate meaning to each of them. Now we have a davar acher. Yad Chazaka are two words. Yad Chazaka, that refers to two plagues. Zeroa Nituya, two plagues. Mora Gadol, two plagues. Osos is a Lashon Rabim, two plagues. Mofsim, Lashon Rabim. So now we simply have a drasha by these five words, each of which is either a plural, or these five expressions, each of which is either a plural or two words. There's a remez of the ten makos, and that gives us the excuse, so to speak, to now talk about the ten makos. Okay? It's a davar acher. It's like you're learning a piece of Gemara. We have pshat number one, and we have pshat number two in how to learn these five expressions. Okay? Davar acher. Now, we're going to talk about the pledge, but we'll save it for another night. But the minhag, as all of us know, is as we recite the ten plagues, we pour out a drop. There are two minhagim, some pour it out from the cup, but the most use the finger to remove it.
Is it a pinky?
No, I don't think there's any. Same problem with Galil and Hagba, all that business, same thing with the pinky. Yeah, it's probably the same mixing up. Now, why we do it is interesting. There's a reason that everybody gives, and it's a really nice reason, but it's quite amazing that there's no mucker for it, although there's a very, very late mucker. But it got very popular in American Haggadahs because it's a nice politically correct pshat. And that is, they want to connect it to the Medrash that says that when the Egyptians were drowning in the Yamsuf and the Malachi Asharis wanted to praise Hashem. So Hashem says, do not praise me, because Maisei Yadai Tavu Bayam, the Egyptians are also my creatures, and they're drowning in the Yamsuf. So don't praise me when the Egyptians are dying. I have rachamim even for the Egyptians. Now that is a Gemara. That is a Gemara, to be sure. So some want to say, as we are talking about the 10 plagues that afflicted the Egyptians, we want to show that our source of joy is not complete. So we commiserate with the Egyptians, rachamim a little bit, by diminishing our wine, which is a sign of simcha. Wine is simcha. Now, this is a very well-known reason. I'm sure you must have heard it, and many, many Haggadahs have it. So around 3 years ago, somebody asked me, what is the makor of this? So I remember, I mean, I've learned the Abraham now, but I haven't learned it page by page, because it's a very long, long perish. But I remember all the Haggadahs always bring it in the name of the Abarbanel. So I said, well, it's the Abarbanel. So he says, you know, I have gone through every page of the Abarbanel. And it's not in the Abarbanel. So I thought, well, it sounds like maybe Rav Shnupfel Hirsch, you know, kind of humanist, refers as a commentary on the Haggadah. Not there. Like, where is this from? Where is this from? So it turns out, it is not at all from any classical commentator, but it is in a 19th century German Rav quotes this vort from his grandfather. It's a very obscure sefer. Now the question you'll ask me is this. So how on earth, why does the art scroll say it's a Abarbanel? Listen to how mistakes are made in Sfarim. And what happens is, people quote, you know, if art scroll says a Abarbanel, then when I write my Haggadah and I say this vort, I will say a Abarbanel. Meaning a mistake gets compounded because people don't go back and look it up. They just rely on something someone else. What happened is, in this book of Drush, the grandson, right, in other words, this is a grandson published a sefer of his grandfather. And at the end, he put in extra vertlech he heard from his grandfather. And this is a word he heard from his grandfather at the Seder. Now the grandson's name was Binyamin. And he prefaced his shtiklach with Aleph Beis, which just means Omar Binyamin. Now, Aleph Beis is also a standard abbreviation for Abarbanel. So somebody sees Aleph Beis and this pshat, so he figured, oh, you're quoting the Abarbanel. Abarbanel. Didn't bother looking up the Abarbanel. And the Aleph Beis of Omar Binyamin became Abarbanel, or in some Siddurim, Avudraham. Again, Aleph Beis, they say the same thing. When the Avudraham doesn't say it, and the Abarbanel doesn't say it. So I'm not saying the vort is not emes, you know, maybe it's emes, but it's a very, very late vort. And what the Rishayim say is very, very different. The Rishayim say that it is not because you're diminishing your joy, but it's the other way, that because Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, biyad chazakah, or etzba elokim, the plagues of the finger of God, so we use our finger to, as we talk about each makah, meaning it's not connected to that. But either way, one should know the halacha that after you diminish your cup, you should pour wine back. You should fill up your cup again. Meaning whatever was taken out should be put in, which is actually a bit of a kasha, I think, maybe on the idea of Maisei Yadai Tavu B'Yam. Okay, so do you want to share tomorrow? Okay, all right. So then we get into the 10 makos, and we can talk a gazillion things about the 10 makos. I'll say a few things about the 10 makos. But the 10 makos are brought in as a davar acher for the fourth pasuk in Mikra Bikur, right? So we have the fourth pasuk. The second davar acher, the 10 makos are merumas in the fourth pasuk, and then we go into the 10 makos. And it is brought down, talk about halacha, that discussing the 10 makos is an important chelik of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, and especially it's something, especially for children, that children can very much get into. They have all sorts of games and shtick and whatever it is, and these are in Yonim that the Tinaikas should be interested in. But we will also see a little bit about what the makos represent, and in particular, Rav Yehuda's abbreviations, why they are important. right? Datsach, Dam Tzvardeya Kinen, Adash, Arov Devar Shechin Ba'achav. Like, why does the Haggadah make a point? Oh, Rav Yehuda used to discuss the Makos in terms of their abbreviations. Well, you can abbreviate anything. I mean, that doesn't automatically mean it becomes a chelik of Torah Shabbal Peh because you can abbreviate. And so we'll talk about that in Shem tomorrow. Okay.
The Jews, they were trying out from the end of their work.
Yeah.
They had to carry the bodies.
They had to carry the bodies to Parah.
Carry the dead bodies to Parah.
To Parah, also, yeah. Either way, either to Parah, way to Parah.
Right.
So the only thing that bothers them is, oh, we got to carry. Right. They're not even thinking about
the child. Someone's going to be killed.
Right. That's what Barbara Nell says is humanization.